Welcome, everyone, to Good Night and Good Game, your source for geek news for the week that was. I'm your host, James, and with me, as always, is my wonderful co-host, Hector.
Hello.
This week on the show, we are going to do things a bit differently. We need, big emphasis on that word, to talk about games industry trends that are going on right now, and to give it the time and respect that it needs. We can't just give you a couple of brief news segments. So what we're going to do this week is something a little different. We're going to do a dual boss room kind of situation. We're going to spend the first half of what we're doing talking about the games industry and the current trends of the games industry. And after that, we're going to be talking about Madam Web and the Sony Marvel films and what that kind of means to the average viewer of superhero films in general. So before we start, don't forget that you can head over to goodnight.gg, where as a patron of our show, you can suggest topics for us to talk about. Also, as a patron, you get access to our off-week episodes. Okay, with all that out of the way, it's time to discuss the games industry.
The games industry.
So let's get to it. Here's how this is going to work in this section. I'm going to quote a few headlines and articles. I'm just going to throw information at you all at once, and then we're going to take all of these headlines that I'm talking about, and we're going to talk about how they line up together and what's going on industry-wise and why this is all important, because there's a lot of stuff that's going on right now that people aren't talking about that they need to be fucking talking about. So I'm going to breathe in deep, and I'm going to go, and I'll let you know when we get there. All right, here we go. Star Citizen developer Cloud Imperium Games has confirmed layoffs at their company. PlayStation has cut 900 jobs. One of the games that was canceled was a Twisted Metal live service project. Sony Interactive Entertainment is shutting down the Getaway and VR Worlds developer London Studio. Embracer canceled 29 games and laid off 1,400 people in the last 6 months. EA will spend over $125 million to lay off 5% of its workforce. EA also announced today that it is doing a $2.6 billion stock buyback. Deck 9 Games, developers of The Expanse, a Telltale series, and Life is Strange True Colors, just announced a 20% staff reduction. The Quarry developer Supermassive confirms it is planning layoffs. Mobile developer Wildlife Studios is making huge layoffs, 20% of its workforce, amid quote-unquote organization-wide restructure. About 133 people will lose their jobs as a result. This is the third round of layoffs in that studio in the last 3 years, by the way. Remedy has acquired full rights to the Control franchise from 505 Games. Toys for Bob is splitting from Microsoft and Activision and is going independent. Saber Interactive is splitting off from Embracer to continue KOTOR remake development. Nearly 3 years after being purchased by Embracer, Gearbox is possibly leaving the company behind. All right. I know that was a lot. Now that we've gone over the headlines, we're going to talk about the state of the industry as it stands today. Because amid all of these huge layoffs, what we are seeing is more studios buying back their independence and, more importantly, their intellectual properties from larger publishers who bought them up over the last few years. So, now that we've gone over the headlines, we're going to talk about the state of the industry as it stands today. Because amid all these huge layoffs, what we are seeing is more studios buying back their independence and, more importantly, their intellectual properties back from larger publishers who bought them up over the last 4 years. So, if you were unaware, over the last 4 years, larger companies like Microsoft and Embracer have been buying up smaller studios so that they will make more first-party content for things like Xbox and Sony. Now we're here. Now we are seeing layoffs. Now we are seeing companies who are trying to buy themselves out of when they were purchased. This is what we need to talk about when we talk about the state of the video games industry. Now that I have sat there and expelled all of the oxygen from my body, Hector, please dive into all of this stuff.
So for any longtime listeners or even just recent listeners, you know that after our Blizzard Are You Okay days, which it never was and still isn't, we moved on to news of layoffs because towards the middle and end of last year, the game industry went through a surprising and unprecedented amount of layoffs. Layoffs have always been a thing in the game industry, especially because there are very large projects that they're building, hundreds, sometimes thousands of developers, to create a project like Grand Theft Auto 5 or Red Dead Redemption 2 or any large AAA game. They just require a lot of work, a lot of hands, a lot of people to make a project like that come to fruition. And it's amazing that they can do it. But when they're done, what they have is a very overstaffed company. And the way that the flow used to go is that they would lay a bunch of people off because they no longer needed this many people while they ramp up their next project, which could take 3 to 5 years.
Right.
But that talent that was let go, if not, you know, way back when I was a kid, they used to all go on vacation and then come back for the next one.
Mm-hmm.
These days, I guess companies decided that's too expensive because everything except for corporate salary, for CEO salaries, is way too expensive for companies these days. What we have instead is they fire them all. But for a while, that was okay because it would release talent out into the industry and other studios would snatch that talent up for the project they were currently working on. That's not happening anymore. The snatching back up part isn't happening anymore. I just said that last year had an unprecedented amount of layoffs. We are far past the total amount of layoffs last year, and it is not March yet. It will be March tomorrow. In the last 2 months, we've had more layoffs in the games industry than we have had all of last year. If someone fact check me on that if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's right. And the talent isn't getting snatched up because, as you heard in the news cycle, everyone's doing layoffs. And the thing that is most in common with everyone doing layoffs is they're also doing stock buybacks because it's a very easy way to make your money worth more money. And that is the hack everyone's using instead of actually making products these days to make profit. So what we have is a capitalist venture ruining an artistic medium, basically. They are bleeding talent from it the same way that, for any listeners who don't know, we're in the United States, the way that we bleed talent from our teaching pool or our, nursing and doctor pool, because we don't pay them enough and we jerk them around and we lay them off and we put too much on them. And people just leave the industry. They go work, they go do something else. So then you don't have... Much more importantly than what we're talking about, you don't have doctors, you don't have teachers, you don't have nurses. But what we don't have are artists. We don't have creative people doing what they love. And unfortunately, what they're most qualified to do, likely what they went to school for. And all I can think is that this is going to make games as a whole worse. That my favorite hobby since I was about 4 years old, worse as I get older. Simply because someone has to make money on it. And some, you know, you might say it's the way of the world that happens to everything, but it doesn't mean we have to like it and it doesn't mean it has to be this way. I think we can all do better by these things. I think we can regulate some of these things. But now, James, we can talk about what it means that, and this is the part where on this show, we don't do rumor and speculation when we talk about news, but we do in boss rooms.
And this is a boss room.
And this is a boss room. So we have some speculation as to...
So real quick, chat did give us the metrics. Thank you, chat, by the way. 8.1K people laid off this year being before being March.
January and February total.
9K total last year.
Okay, so we're 900 late. We're one Sony away from one more Sony away from the total layoffs. And let's not forget, if GTA 6 launches this year, they will be laying off a whole lot of people.
Yeah, I didn't put it in because we're not doing the typical news cycle this week. But Rockstar did announce they're going to make all of their people mandatory come back into the office and work.
Oh, yeah. And that's a great way to get rid of, to have employees quit instead of firing them. Like that is genuinely practiced. So that's a thing. So yeah, there will be more layoffs. We will far surpass, this is a prediction. We'll far surpass that 9,000 from last year before May.
Yeah. And so because we're doing a boss room, because we can speculate in these sections, the reason I put all these headlines together in total when I say, here's all the layoffs that happened, right? That was all in the last week to 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That is all of those layoffs that I just mentioned all happened in the last week to 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second part of that where I said all of these studios are buying back their own stock and smaller companies are buying themselves out of their contract with the big publishers. Right.
Going independent.
Yeah.
Going.
Embracer Group, when they were buying up companies, they bought something like 29 to 30 something studios.
Mm-hmm.
Now several of those, including Gearbox, are going out there and they're saying, hey, we want our autonomy back. we want to, you know, have purchase our company out from the bigger publisher so that we can make the games that we want. You have companies like Remedy who, because the way the publishing works, even though Remedy made the game Control, it's still partially owned by the publisher who publishes the game for them. And they're buying back those rights so that they can make the games that they want to make.
Right. It's very easy for a studio to do all of the work, to literally come up with an IP, do all of the work developing it, do all of the work casting it, do all of the work making the entire game, and then not own the rights to that property. Bloodborne is probably the most obvious example, but there are others. And so what a lot of studios have begun doing is buying the rights to their IP back. And the only thing I can think of is that that means they need to insulate themselves. They need to insulate themselves from layoffs because they have to be able to keep their talent, because their talent is what makes they recognize, rightly so, that the talent that they cultivated and made and maintained and trained and believe in, that talent is what makes their games good. Mm-hmm. And so that they need to defend themselves from having to lay them off because some guy who doesn't like video games, frankly, decides that we need to cut all the highest paid people first. And they need to be able to continue making the IP that they already came up with, their brain children, you know, their intellectual property, as we like to call it. Because the worst, I can't imagine a sadder future than one in which EA or whoever owns Control and Remedy has to just do something else.
Right. We heard just a few months ago that Saber Interactive was working on the Knights of the Old Republic remake. Mm-hmm. This is a remake, by the way. The Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic is a very beloved RPG, BioWare RPG. The concept that after all of these years, because this was an Xbox, like original Xbox mm-hmm. game.
Oh, yeah.
That it was getting a remake. Everybody was like, you're just printing money. Literally, by just remaking this, you're printing money. Mm-hmm. And then about a month ago, we heard this thing where, oh, suddenly Knights of the Old Republic is canceled.
Right.
Because they didn't want to pump any more money into the project. Mm-hmm. Now we're here a month from that news, and Saber Interactive, who was a part of Embracer Group, who was working on Knights of the Old Republic, said, right, so we're buying ourselves out of our contract with Embracer. We're taking the Knights of the Old Republic contract and the game that we were working on, all of those assets, with us so that we can become an independent studio again.
I love this story so much. So I'm gonna compare this to another story real quick. I'm gonna try and be brief. So when they were making the movie Home Alone, mm-hmm. right? They had a publisher. They had a distributor in the biz, I believe is what they call it. They had someone who was going to pay for the movie, and that person decided the movie that company decided the movie got too expensive, and they were shutting it down. So they go to the director, and the director and the producer are walking behind the company guy. And they're walking from room to room where everyone is working. And they're like, hey, you're shut down. Stop working right now. Nobody's getting paid. We're sorry. And they walk around the entire facility where all these people are working on this movie, from set creation to costumes to, you know, editing, everything, the whole way through. They walk around, everyone, you're fired. Go home. You're not getting paid. Sorry, project's canceled. And immediately behind them, like literally 12 steps behind them, they would leave the room. And another person would walk in with someone from a different distributor and say, nope, we're still paying for it. Don't put anything down. Keep working. Mm-hmm. Nope, dude, we're still doing this. Don't put anything down. Keep working. That guy had to say his piece legally. And we're sorry about that, but you're fine. Keep working. You're absolutely getting paid. Just sorry to disturb you. It's like my favorite story in probably some of cinema history. And I love that this happened for this game, because I can't think of a more wholesome thing for it to happen to. Mm-hmm. Because Guitar is a revered game, you know. It sits in people's nostalgia the way that all of the greats do.
Deus Ex, Vampire yeah. Bloodlines.
Absolutely.
It's a game that when you mention Knights of the Old Republic, people say, oh man, I missed that game. I want to go play it again.
Yeah, it's like people, you see people's childhoods in the glint of their eyes when you mention this game to them, you know? They're also making the Warhammer 40K Space Marine sequel.
Yes, I'm so excited.
And I can't wait for that game, and I'm so glad that that's not getting fucked with, because the studio's going independent, and I love that for them.
Yep. So, Chad is asking a question. when we're talking about the fact that all these indie developer or these all these game developers are buying themselves out of their contracts and they're trying to buy back their old IPs. Chad is asking the question. So if a publisher doesn't sell back the IP to the studio that, originally owned it, do you see them as the bad guy? This is a complicated question because wording is very specific for this. When you say the word bad guy, I don't think that that's the proper terminology for this because
there's a
they originally did buy the studio did make the agreement that they were going to let allow themselves and their IPs to be bought by a publisher. If the publisher doesn't agree to, if a publisher agrees to release the studio but keep the IP, by the metrics of the contract they signed however many years ago, they are entitled to do so. Now, bad guy, that's a harsh, that's a weird way of putting it. Is it distasteful? Absolutely.
So there's this thing that we talk about in politics. There's this thing that we say about foreign policy. Because mostly when you talk about politics, especially locally, you talk about what's good and bad and what's right and wrong. And we make laws that way to try and be the most fair to everyone, or at least that's the idea. When it comes to foreign policy, none of it, not a single decision is ever about right and wrong. Never. It's about power. In business, there's no decision that's ever been made that makes somebody the bad guy. You have as many people as possible looking at a thing trying to make the most money off of it. That being said, I think that's a shitty reason to make art. And I am on the side of good art. So, does that make them the bad guy? No, there's no such thing as a bad guy. There's no such thing as evil. Evil isn't real. Racism is real. Oppression is real. Evil, that's not a thing. Everyone just has their own idea of what is right, and we try and make it the most fair for everybody. But when it comes to this, I am on the side of good art, and people who sacrifice better art for more money, I do not like that they are in control of the art. That bothers me, and that is why I speak the way that I do. I don't think anyone is actually a bad guy. I think it, people do horrible things for what they think are the right reasons.
Or profit.
And in this case, for money. Yep. They don't think they're the right reasons. They think it will make them the richest and fuck them kids and pull the ladder up behind me after I climbed it. And, you know, I grew up on welfare, but you don't get any. Like, that. Those people, like, are they bad guys? Yeah, kind
of. So I want to compare the current state of the industry to a movie series that we watched recently. This movie series is called Feast.
I can't wait to
if
see where this
is going.
If
you've never heard of these movies, I wasn't familiar with them, and I know a lot about horror movies. Hector and our friend Ross introduced me to these movies. It is a series of three horror movies. They all take place back to back to back. They're B or C level horror films.
We do not recommend you watch these movies, by the
way. We do not recommend you
watch
these movies. They're fantastic, but we do not recommend them.
Yeah. Do not put my name out when you show this movie to someone.
There is this scene in Feast 2 where there's these monsters that have swarmed the town. And there's a crying child in a car. And at some point, this character says, all the other characters are who are on the roof that see this child is crying in a car, the parent has died, and goes, I have to go down there and save the child. And everybody's like, if you go down there, they are going to kill you. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't care. It is the right thing to do. I'm going to go save this child. And he gets down there and he goes and he grabs the child. Now, this scene, this character in this moment are these big name publishers like Embracer Group who looked to these companies and said, man, they're hurting to make the capital they need to make their art. I'm going to buy them up so that they have the money and resources they need to make their art. And they grab the baby out of the car and they start to run. And then the monsters came after him in the movie. Spoilers. The monsters came after him. And at some point, that character had to make a decision. And the investors and people who are on the board and all this, they represent the monster in this scenario, just so we're being very clear about our metaphors, right? At some point, this character looks at this child and decides it is more worth it to throw the child at the monsters so that he can live than to try and save that child. That's the current state of the video game industry.
They're just tossing the baby at the monsters because, frankly, what else are you going to do?
Right. They're like, hey, look, we're the industry's in a bad place right now. We will allow these artists to buy their way out of a contract. So they are still making money. They made money on the initial purchase. Now they're making money off of the games they made. Mm-hmm. Now they're making money off the fact they're buying themselves, these game developers, out of their contracts.
Right.
It is pure money that is being filtered into the board, into the shareholders, all of it. We are throwing the baby at the monsters and saying, good luck.
Yeah. So last point we'll say on it, and real world example, Sony owns the rights to make Spider-Man movies, mm-hmm. right? And Spider-Man games, they own, I think, Spider-Man as an IP. And all anyone wanted for years and years and years was for Sony to sell Spider-Man back to Marvel. Marvel was doing great with the MCU at the time. Everyone loves Spider-Man. Spider-Man's one of the top three. It's like Superman, Batman, and Spider-Man, right? And like everything else is everything else. But Spider-Man's a big deal. And Marvel was a big deal at the time. And Marvel at the time could do no wrong. So it was like, yeah, give him Spider-Man. And they wouldn't. And they were like, absolutely not. And they even made a whole new series of movies starring Andrew Garfield, which I found charming, if not good, because good is not my word for those movies, but they were charming. But like they made those literally so that they would not, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars so that the rights to Spider-Man would not lapse back to Marvel. And they kept doing that, and that really annoyed people. That really annoyed people. And even now, and we're going to talk about this in a little while, they're still doing dumb Spider-Man shit. Because they refused to sell Spider-Man back to Marvel. And I think if Marvel had Spider-Man as just like a gateway to like do cool crossovers in all of their movies, they would be killing it. They really would. They would be doing good with Spider-Man. They found a good Spider-Man. They might overuse him a bit. And Tom Holland has a bit of a mouth issue.
He does a little bit.
But I everyone agrees that it would be better if Sony wasn't in the picture. But Sony wasn't about to take a pay cut, and they weren't about to give away their most popular IP. And this is Sony. Sony, you know, like owns PlayStation.
Right.
They have the biggest video game franchise on the planet, the biggest platform, the most popular one. They could get rid of Spider-Man and they could stop being assholes to Marvel, back then our favorite company. Mm-hmm. But like, they wouldn't. But are they bad guys? No, they made a bunch of movies and employed a bunch of people. They made some charming Spider-Man movies. And you know what? I like Venom. I'm sorry. I just do. That's a good time.
And we are going to talk about that a lot more back in the second section.
We are. But like, you know, are they bad guys? No. Would art be better if they weren't dicks about it? 100%.
And we have a follow-up question about that same topic. From Chad, it says, with that being said, if Remedy wanted to buy back Quantum Break from Microsoft so they could create a unified universe, what would you say? Well, I mean, I figured they would want to do that. Sure, mm-hmm. That's an easy answer. Same as Toys for Bob. But if Microsoft said no, would you look at them differently?
I look at Microsoft differently, not because they won't sell IP, but because they lay people off after buying companies. Right. I look at Microsoft badly because they affect actual people's lives in the pursuit of what they do. No, I mean, if they didn't want to... Okay, so Quantum Break bombed. So if they decided they didn't want to sell Quantum Break back to Remedy, that's a spite thing. Like, that would feel icky. But, I mean, again, no, I don't look at Microsoft differently. I still have a Game Pass subscription because it's the best deal in gaming. I'll never buy an Xbox console because it's not fucking worth it, because they haven't made it worth it in two generations. But, you know... Microsoft is Microsoft. The only thing that makes me look at them differently is when they decide to lay off a whole bunch of people from a company they just bought and then try and shield themselves from the FCC by saying they were already planning to lay them off. It's like, yeah, but you bought them so that they, you know, would be financially solvent, right? Yeah. That's what you kept saying.
And that's just what it is. I mean, yeah, we can look at them differently for a lot of reasons, but the fact of the matter is they bought the IP to begin with. It's, again, distasteful that they wouldn't give the IP back. But, again, that's their purchase. They made the purchase. Mm-hmm. They have every right to do that. What is more important is the lives of the developers who create this art.
Right.
Because these artists can go on to make bigger and better things than Quantum Break, and they deserve the opportunity to do that without a large company lording over them that they could all be fired at any given moment.
Yeah. And you know what? It would be fun if we got a bunch of cameos from Quantum Break in Control 2 or whatever. That'd be really cool. But I, you know, I could live without it if Microsoft decided to leave it out the same way that we got an entire, you know, phase one of Marvel without Spider-Man. Like, we'll figure it out.
So to wrap this whole thing up for this section of the show, when we look at all these things that we talked about earlier, both the mass layoffs that are going on within the industry, companies buying themselves out of their contract and going independent again, what does that say to you about the state of the industry over the next few years?
I think – so there's this meme that's been going around for the last several years. I've usually seen it presented as a Sonic the Hedgehog reclining with a word bubble over his head, maybe eating a chili dog. It depends on the meme. But he says, what I want is I want video games that are shorter and – frankly, less polished with worse graphics made by people who are paid more and work less. And I'm not kidding. And I think that's what we're going to get. Thank you so much. I want shorter games with worse graphics made by people who are paid more to work less. I'm not kidding. And that's what we all want. And I think this is the industry correcting itself. I think more and more studios who want to protect themselves should get away from their huge publishers and should, if they have the ability to buy back their own IP. But if they can't, if they don't have that money, leave anyway. You know, get out of the publicly traded space. Get out of a space where your company's going to lay everyone off to buy back its own stock and just be able to make games that people want to buy and make your money that way rather than being owned by some company that only makes money on the stock market rather than by actually making a product. You make a product and you want to make a product.
A few years ago, we had an instance where Blizzard, in the middle of all of the atrocities performed at that company, a bunch of their developers left. And the nail in the coffin for them was basically the developers were like, hey, when do we get a chance to make another StarCraft? And they were like, that doesn't sound very profitable at all, bro. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do that. And they went, cool. So we are all going to leave and we're going to start a new studio. And we are just about a year away from all of these ex-Blizzard devs releasing their version of StarCraft.
Yeah, yeah. I think we saw some news about it yesterday morning. Like, it looks good. I think it's about to hit like early access or something.
The next question from Chad is one specifically for Hector. My man, Chad asks, would a union protect these jobs?
100,000%. That is what unions are for. They keep you from being laid off by making the company sign a contract with employees as a whole, collectively, so that there are very, very specific reasons why someone can be let go and no other ones. And they have lawyers to do things like when a company says, well, I can do whatever I want. I'm going to fire you anyway. A lawyer shows up and says, okay, but money, please, because we're going to make sure this guy gets employed because he's part of our union. And if you're not going to employ him, someone else will. But you are going to pay money for violating this contract. So, yes. Yes, a union would save these jobs. But again, maybe because of the companies they work for, it's not a job worth saving unless you can unionize it. So everybody who works for a AAA developer who is right now publicly traded, my only advice to you is unionize. And everyone who works for a small indie company that's trying its best to treat its employees as good as possible and give them the most downtime and the most creative freedom and mostly the most flexibility of life to be able to do things like buy houses, date, have families, raise children – they should unionize too, because if their company is as good as it says it is and it acts like, then they won't be mad about it because they know they're negotiating in good faith with all of their employees about what their employees think is best for them to keep creating things for the company and making everyone money. I don't know why this is such a hard concept for people. Unions literally always make always make companies stronger. You very rarely, if ever, see a headline about local company that had too many unions went under. It went under because, well, they just decided to pay their employees more than they were selling their products for. That's not a thing. Unions aren't there to rob companies of their solvency. They're there to make sure the employees get paid their due for what they create. And by what they create, I mean the profit from what they create.
Never forget that Activision Blizzard, before they were purchased by Microsoft, by the numbers, they owned the biggest game in the world, that being Call of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
Call of Duty releases $2 billion of sales every year.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time that Activision Blizzard was making billions of dollars from Call of Duty, it was being reported that the employees of Activision Blizzard did not make enough money to both own, specifically to rent a place in California where Blizzard was.
Right.
And also pay for meals in the company kitchen at the same time.
Right. The cafeteria that they put up in their at their place of work, the prices were too high for the salaries they were giving their employees. And I just need you to really, really let that marinate for a second. Like, is that not a diss? Like it's not, like, it's, they put a cafeteria there, I guess because they were trying to do something good. And somehow they let it be more of a taunt than a good thing. More of a, hey, look at all this food you can't afford where you're working. You should run down to the local McDonald's.
And here's the thing, is it's not like the prices, from what we understand, were high in the cafeteria. It's that the amount of money that they were making was so low that if they paid their rent, they couldn't eat daily in the cafeteria at the place they work.
Correct. You're talking about fully grown adults working at one of the most profitable companies in the world. Call of Duty, every year when it released, would make more than all of Hollywood and all of American professional sports combined. Like, this company is doing nothing but raking it in. Bobby Kotick is a fucking billionaire of a CEO. Of a CEO. That's a person with a job. Not a person who, he didn't own Activision. He was a CEO. Billionaire. That's
his job, was basically to cover up all the bad things that were happening.
Yeah, and especially the ones that he did. That's how profitable that company was. And they would not pay a living wage, and by that I mean being able to afford rent and fucking eat, to the employees making their most important game. And that is why you need unions.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We have one more big section to talk about. We're going to be talking about the Sony Marvel problem. Give us just a minute to go refresh our drinks. And when we come back, we'll be going into that in the last part of our news.
Mm-hmm. The Sony Marvel problem.
And we're back. Hey, everyone. So this last weekend, we went to go see Madame Web. And I know that we both have feelings about it. Usually, we don't talk about a movie this soon after its release. But we do need to talk about Madame Web and what's going on over at Sony Films these days when it comes to their Marvel properties. Here's a lot to talk about. Let's just jump into it, Hector. And by the way, just as a heads up, there will be some possible spoilers about Madame Web. I promise you. You're not missing anything. Let's talk about it.
Don't worry. It'll be on streaming in like a week.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
So several years ago, when my mom was studying spiders in the jungle, I had this. So, Madame Web, let's see. Do you want to talk about the movie first? Do you want to get that part out of the way?
Let's just talk about the movie first. Get it out of the way.
So this movie looked like it was made. what? It's Kung Pao. Do you remember the movie Kung Pao?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. If you guys ever want to look, I know we're kind of old, so sometimes all the movie references don't land, but there was a movie that came out a long time ago. It's a comedy martial arts movie, which is right up my alley, but it was American made, and the joke was, man, don't all these movies look goofy because of how dubbed they are and how fake the wire work is and how bad the wigs are. That's the idea of this movie. Kung Pao. It's hilarious. Hilarious movie. Maybe the wrong tone if you watch it these days. Like, I don't know if I would do these tropes as a white man on screen in front of people, but it was...
But you're also not a white man, so...
Yeah, but and it's still very funny. And it's still very funny. But there's this joke they have in the movie where the main character is clearly saying all of his lines, but off from what the audio is where he is saying his lines to basically simulate the effect of overdubbing when English would go over Chinese, and or when you were watching the movie in English and the people speaking would switch back and forth between like Mandarin and Cantonese. And, you know, it just made no sense. The mouth movement and the dialogue were just way, way off. The whole movie's like that. The reason I bring that up is this movie has a villain. His whole thing is that, like, he inherited powers from some of the fucking spider people who live in the jungles of wherever, where my mom used to study spiders. He got these powers that are very, very, very close to Spider-Man's. And by that, I mean he has a fucking Spider-Man suit on. He literally wears a Spider-Man suit while he walks around killing people. And every line of dialogue this character has is either ADR over his lip movement, and very, very obviously, it is bad. The lines that they gave this character clearly are not the lines that man said on set that day.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and this happens more often than the thing I just said, every line of dialogue he speaks, we're looking at the back of his head at a different character. He is speaking to someone else, and we are getting his shoulder while he is literally monologuing. Like, while he is giving speeches, we get either the back of his head or we get his face, and the person on screen is clearly saying something very different. I have not seen that VO fucking transfer be this bad in a movie this much. I don't think ever. Unless it was done
bad.
On purpose.
Really?
Unless
bad.
It was done incredibly on purpose as a joke, like in Kung Pao. The reason I brought up Kung Pao is because what I was just talking about was a joke they made. And this movie just does it shamelessly at you in a Marvel franchised, a Sony, like AAA fucking superhero movie. That's how much respect they had for this movie.
We're talking about a movie that, if you've not been following the media about it, the main actress of the movie,
Dakota Johnson, I love her, by the way,
basically has gone into every interview in the last several months to talk about this movie and shit all over it.
Mm-hmm. She has either said like, ooh, yeah, no, I just like they'll show a clip and she's like,
I have not seen this amount of disdain between actor and project since Robert Pattinson and Twilight.
Yeah. No, straight up, like, she had... I think the media, especially Hollywood media, was eating it up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because she was trashing this movie, and everyone was like, good, Dakota. Yeah, you do it. This movie is trash, and it deserves to be trash. But it was also being portrayed as, like, a lack of class. Like, she should be defending her baby as if it was her fucking project or she gave a shit about it. They literally paid her to be there. They paid a lot of really good actors to be there. And you know what? They gave their all. I didn't dislike Dakota Johnson's performance. I didn't dislike anyone's performance in this movie. But the plot made no sense. There were no stakes. The jokes were, frankly, kind of mean to the spider universe as a whole. And there was just nonstop, like, most people's dialogue was exposition. Like, it felt like I was watching, like, a cartoon from the 90s where they have to explain to you everything that's happening in every scene.
It's really interesting you bring that up because you and I are currently in the middle of a rewatch of the original X-Men animated series.
Yes, we are. And it's very good. What a great cartoon. But you notice things you didn't notice when you were 5 years old watching it on your, you know, 12, your 6-inch CRT with an antenna on top to catch the Fox radio waves.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite thing is that the media couldn't get enough of it. And literally after box office weekend, in which the movie made $6 million. You can go ahead and Google any other opening weekend for any other superhero property and know what $6 million is. shows. But yeah, so they go to her after box office weekend, and she, apparently they go and find her on a beach, like in Mexico or in the Caribbean or something. And they're like, yo, I heard your movie flopped. And she literally says, yeah, I'm not worried about it.
Like, yeah, I got paid.
Yeah, she's like, yes, that's, I'm not, I don't care. Could you go away, please?
Yeah.
I'm on vacation.
So my thing about this movie, first off, I just want to point out that in my personal artist objective, I do think this movie is better than Morbius.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get out there.
I would watch this movie for the cast alone about 20 times before anyone could horsewhip me to watch Morbius again.
So when I saw Batman versus Superman, just hang with me here.
No, I'm not saying shit.
Yeah, I get it. Like, I'm a cat right now. I'm going to do a big stretch. When I watched Batman versus Superman, I looked at that movie at the end of it and went, I see why everybody says that it's bad, but I also see the potential of the film.
Mm-hmm.
That somebody walked in and looked at the script and said, I could see a movie here. They just didn't get it right. So with that in mind, I went to Madame Web and I got to the end of it and I felt the same way that I did at the end of, Batman versus Superman. I went, that was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I see why the actors who signed on for it. Because if you handed me that script without the director or any of that involved, just the way that it plays out, felt good. Like, there's a good movie hiding in there somewhere. Mm-hmm. There was a good movie hiding in that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if it's rewrites or studio interference or what happened, but something happened and it got real weird and not good.
Mm-hmm.
And that's disappointing because, A, everybody's expectations were low because nobody gives a shit about Madame Web as a character.
Right.
So you had the potential of taking something that nobody cared about and making something really great out of it because
literally a franchise.
There are no expectations.
Yeah.
And that was disappointing. And that is what led me to where we are now in this discussion, which is when we think about the Sony Marvel universe, specifically Sony owns the rights to all things Spider-Man related.
Right. Spider-Man and Spider-Man's villains.
Right. Yeah. Propane and propane accessories. Mm-hmm. That's what they own with Spider-Man. And so this year, we know that Marvel Studios, owned by Disney, is only putting out one movie that is reflective of their brand, and that is Deadpool 3.
Right. We realize that Marvel did a big thing this year where they were like, we get it. We hear you. We see the sales numbers. We fucked up. It was too much.
We're going to take a break.
It was too much Marvel. We're sorry. We're going to do better. Next year, you're not going to hear shit from us. The only thing you're going to get is what we know is guaranteed that you will enjoy. And it's literally all we're serving you. Here on a plate. We hope you love it.
Here's Ryan Reynolds on a plate.
Here's Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman.
On a plate.
Just together. Being the most fun people you could possibly share a room with. And everyone was like, thank fuck. Oh, that sounds so good. Not only can I not wait for that movie, but I also can't wait to spend a whole year not worrying about what Marvel's going to do to the Eternals or something.
And then Sony's like, hey, y'all, we heard you like some superheroes.
Right? This is our year. This is, while they're letting everyone have a break, it is our time to shine. This is where we can, like, crank the Morbius and Venom 2 of it all up to 11. You know how many movies Sony is making about Spider-Man villains this year? Including Madame Web. Three movies this year are coming out.
We have Madame Web. We know that Venom is getting its
third. We are getting Venom 3 at the end of the year. You know what? If any of those movies deserved a franchise, it was Venom.
Absolutely. By the way, the poster for Venom 3, it says things.
Yeah.
It was already, Venom was already a weirdly sexual series, but then they did the poster for Venom, the new Venom movie, and I'm like,
kind of leaning into the tentacles
a bit. We're really getting into that. But yeah. Then we have Madame Web, which we've already mentioned, like, cool concept,
yeah.
Bad execution. We have Kraven right
around. Kraven the Hunter. Kraven, if any character has ever been less deserving of it, their own movie, they would be Aquaman. like straight up, like the thing no one gave a shit about. And that is not throwing shade at the Aquaman movies. Mm-hmm. I love what they did with those. I recently watched them. Yeah. They literally turned that joke of the character into some fun in the first movie. The second movie was kind of trash.
It was kind of trash.
But the first one was a good effort, and I love it, and Justin Lin's great. But... Yeah, so Kraven is less deserving than Aquaman of their own movie. Kraven is a B, generous B, of a Spider-Man villain who has literally one good comic book story. Not one good cartoon story, not one good video game story we're cribbing from. Not like a plethora of comic runs that you could crib material. No, his one good comic story. And somehow he keeps ending up in material. And I don't get it. Maybe he's cheaper. He's cheaper to animate than the Scorpion or something. And I get that. But like... there's nothing interesting about Kraven the Hunter.
Nothing.
And I watched a trailer for this movie.
I played Spider-Man 2. And let me tell you, when I saw the trailer for Spider-Man 2, the PlayStation game, mm-hmm. when I saw Kraven show up and they were like touting him as the main villain, I went, hey, he's not the main villain. I will put money in Vegas on this right now. He is not the main villain. But two, I will be impressed if you make an interesting Kraven story. And you know what? They made an interesting Kraven story.
Yeah, it was cool. And you know why it was cool? Because he wasn't the main villain.
Yep.
He had a little bit of motivation. We followed it through. We watched Spider-Man kick this incredibly normal human's ass, and then we moved on.
Yep.
Because Kraven the Hunter is a really good hunter, and Spider-Man can lift a sedan over his head. I don't know what we're talking about here, because not only is Kraven a really good hunter, but he doesn't use guns. So Spider-Man with the sedan lifting thing,
sometimes he uses them.
I mean, he doesn't in anytime it's important, like when you could use one to kill a Spider-Man. Like, he just doesn't do that. He's like, I have a knife, and it's like, cool, I have webs. I don't know what to say. Anyway, how do I say this without? Look, I like movies about women more than I like movies about men. Just in general, I have a better time when there are a lot of women on the screen. I don't mean that in a sexual way. I just find women as characters more interesting than men a lot of the time because the tropes are different, their fears are different, their motivations are different. Mm-hmm. So when I watched Madame Web, I was at the very least interested in what our characters were going through. I don't fucking care about Kraven the Hunter. So I can't... possibly imagine a future in which this movie is as good to me as Madame Web. And I told you how I feel about Madame Web.
The bar is on the floor.
The bar is buried next to the conduits under the building. There are sewer pipes nearby the bar. And yeah, I mean, Venom might be fun. It might be more fun than Madame Web. But it won't be as good as any of the Spider-Man movies or half as good as anything that Marvel produced before Endgame. So, like, I think our main concern here, as I'm finally going to put voice to it as we describe all these Sony projects coming out, is that Marvel decided to take a break, and they were smart to do so. They were like, hey, you know what? People are fucking getting sick of us. Maybe we need to... pull back and regroup and really do some really special stuff and release it slowly.
Maybe we need to pull out a little bit.
Yeah, so that we don't get too excited. Yep. And we don't you know blow the whole thing right at the beginning when we could go much longer if we were just had some patience.
Yep, just have a little patience and not really go in as deep as we thought we would.
Exactly. So Marvel's doing this. They're doing the smart thing. They're doing the wise thing. They're doing the mature penis thing to do. And Sony's over here like, oh my God, they made room. They made room. Okay. Let me get in there. Let me get in there. Oh, they're going to be quiet for a second. Let me put on my tap dancing shoes. But they don't understand that they got quiet because everyone was sick of listening to them. So here they come out with their tap dancing shoes. And they suck. They're bad tap dancers.
So chat. Just said something, and I need you, everybody, to understand. Like we've been doing this podcast for 10 years. There's a reason why Hector and I are best friends, and we do what we do. And understand that a lot of these discussions that we are having, that we have on our podcast, Hector and I have already had multiple times throughout the week as mm-hmm. the news has been airing. We tend to send each other articles. We talk about it. We work together. Over lunch today, we were literally discussing things that were going to be discussed on the show this week. At some point, I looked at Hector, and I said something along the lines of, so, like, there's this quote in Jurassic Park, right, Hector? And I can't remember exactly how it goes, but it was something about, like, you're busy thinking about if you – you're so busy doing it that you didn't think about if you should. And Hector, like, without missing a beat, he's like, you were too busy thinking about if you could, not thinking about if you should. And chat – literally just quoted that back to us.
Yeah. And it's just like it lives rent free in our brains forever. Like these lessons that Jeff Goldblum taught us as children.
Yes.
Like
yes.
It's true. It's like maybe before you leap, you should look and be like, I wonder if we'll land alive. I wonder if this will be safe.
He also taught me that women like a ripped, shirtless man.
Yep. Yeah. No, and it has never been bad advice.
Yeah.
Never been bad advice. Just unbuttoned, like, down to here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And if you have a lady who already likes the way you look.
Or a gentleman.
She's nuts for it. Or a gentleman. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. So we so much appreciate that comment because that's literally on our brains right now.
Yeah. And yeah, it's been a wild fucking ride because, you know, we did walk out of Madam, and every time I walk out of a movie, I always think about this concept. A lot of great YouTubers talk about it. I know people like High Top Films talks about it, where, you know, people don't go into making a movie with the intention of making a bad movie.
No, never.
And we say that as people who watched 3 Feast films.
Yeah, and Madam Web.
And that's questionable when you have watched the Feast movies. A movie in which all of the monsters just hang dong.
Oh, yeah. These monsters are anatomically correct throughout all 3 movies.
I don't know if I would call that anatomically correct. Those things were like the size of like an arm.
So by anatomically correct, I mean there are absolutely inhuman monsters running around with teeth the size of raptor claws and hands with more claws than fingers. But what they do is they don't wear pants like monsters don't. And what they have between their legs is what things have between their legs when they don't wear armature pants. And they're all there.
Yep.
Ready to be seen.
Yep.
And that's the deal. So yeah, lots of dong in those movies.
Even in that, you could tell they never set out to make a bad movie.
Right.
And I do not think that Madam Web was made with malicious intent.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was made with greed intent.
Right. There's a difference between making a project you know will be bad because you think people will enjoy it. And by bad, I literally mean like low budget and campy. I mean, there's a certain amount of gore that goes from distasteful to funny. And like you're really shooting for that. You're really trying to get, you know, maybe a horror audience that's more used to that sort of thing and really appreciates practical effects to super appreciate how deep you took this joke. That is all in good fun. That's trying to find your audience. That's no different than a comedian trying out new material just in film for it's way more expensive and involves more people. The people who make movies that they know are going to be bad are people who make movies not that are bad, but that are cynical.
People like John Waters, Troma Films.
Right. That's all great. That's where James Gunn came from.
Yeah.
But when someone makes a movie like Madam Web, when someone makes a movie like Morbius, that's a cynical movie. That's a movie where someone goes, we can shit out whatever we want and someone's going to give us $100 million. These movies always make at least $100 million.
I'm really, really worried. And I know this is kind of off topic. I'm really worried that that's what they're trying to do with the new Crow film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried that they are making sure they have their IP rights.
If they're doing that, then they've done zero research because they'll know that the Crow never made any money.
That's true.
So, like, if they're trying to tap into a nostalgia market, it wasn't there before it was nostalgia. So I don't know what anyone's talking about. There are a few projects you can talk about that are like cult classics that are ubiquitous. I mean, movies that didn't do well.
Well, I mean, Chet's pointing out Sharknado.
That was a movie
that was intentionally made to be the way that it was.
Right, absolutely. You don't cast Tara Reid and Mark McGrath in a movie because you're trying to save money on your shitty project that you think isn't going anywhere. You do that because that's hilarious. Because you have a little bit of celebrity recognition and a lot of CG shark budget. And you're going to use that. That's the Piranha series. That's the Sharknado series. That's literally everything.
Mind you, we watched the first Feast movie. One of the actors in the first Feast movie, I cannot remember his name right now, but at the time, he was like at his peak at playing a main character in Grey's Anatomy.
Correct.
There was no reason why he showed up in that movie for the 10 minutes that he did, other than to have some fun and some camp, like in a C production at best.
Right. He's talking about Eric Dane. Eric Dane's a great actor, most recently in Euphoria. And yes, he played McSteamy in Grey's Anatomy at the exact same time this movie aired. And yeah, he was in it for about 5 minutes. And while he was in it, you could look in his eyes and you could tell he was having the time of his life.
Just having a blast.
Yeah, he was having so much fun in that movie.
So there's this interesting quote that went around for a little while when Madame Web came out. And it was from the actress who played I can't remember all of the Spider-Men that were in it, but she was talking about how when she got to film her scenes, she got really excited about it because in the comics, that particular character is known for being a ballerina,
right? Yeah, the ballet stuff. That's Sydney Sweeney, wasn't it?
Sydney Sweeney, right? Mm-hmm. And that character in the comics had a certain pose that she would always make when she came down from her web, and she insisted when she was talking to the director, "I want to have this scene. Like, give me this scene." And she was so excited about it, and they put it in, and she looks like she's having the time of her life.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't look like somebody who is held at gunpoint being like, you're going to do this crappy Spider-Man movie.
Right.
She was making the most of it, man.
Yeah, she didn't look like it's like, put on the suit and get in front of the green screen. It seemed like she really wanted to make something good.
Yeah.
And you know what? Like I said, I didn't mind any of the performances in this movie. There were some actually very good ones. I mean, if you're going to give us Ben and May Parker, you picked good cast for it.
Yeah, but we didn't even talk about that. Ben Parker is one of the main characters.
Yeah, Ben Parker, I guess he is an EMT and drives an ambulance with Madame Web.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't read any Madame Web comics. I don't know her lore, so I don't know how canon any of this is. But there's literally a whole subplot where Ben is going to ask a woman to marry him, and like,
or he's just going on a date with her.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. He's going on a date with her.
Yeah,
and his sister is very pregnant, and we get introduced to that, so we get to see little Peter Parker be born. That's a lot of fun,
yep.
Right? For anybody who knows what's going on, you're like, oh, I know that reference. I know that reference. But yeah, like all of their performances were good. Adam Scott was great. Dakota Johnson was great, despite her attitude afterwards. I think probably because of her attitude afterwards, because she was like, I'm going to come in here, I'm going to get 110% around all the CG and all this green screen, and I'm going to leave. I don't care if the movie doesn't make any money, because that doesn't matter to me. And it's okay to say that. It's okay for something to be just a job that you do because you have the skills to do it and you're good at it. You don't have to buy into the project. You don't have to be its cheerleader. You can just do the thing because you're good at it, and that's what they hired you for.
Yeah. So I know that you're asking yourselves, well, James, it sounds like you're wrapping up the podcast, and we are. Things are coming full circle. You've talked about two very different topics, talking about the video games industry, talking about Madame Web and the Sony Marvel universe. Is there anything here that would connect the two? I can hear you asking through the radio waves. Dear listener, we are in the middle of a situation in which a lot of studios are buying back themselves from corporate overlords,
mm-hmm.
and buying back their IPs.
Right. And it allows them to do exactly one thing, and that's protect their talent and protect their property.
Wouldn't it be cool? And I know that Sony's going to really fight this along the way because they already have several times. But wouldn't it be cool? And we're not big on monopolies around here.
No.
But wouldn't it be cool if maybe Marvel Disney was able to finally purchase back the rights to some of this Spider-Man stuff and maybe not make a Kraven the Hunter movie?
Yeah, I think I saw like half of one, a trailer for that movie. It looks like he was eating somebody. Like, I think he's a cannibal.
That's weird.
That's so weird. That's not so weird. That's not that character, y'all. I don't. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I literally saw that bit of trailer, and I was like, "What are you doing?"
Although I got to tell you, keep the train rolling for Venom.
Venom's fun. I'll watch Tom Hardy do anything, frankly.
The whole Venom coming out story was really cool.
No,
like,
sounds
that was
great.
So adorable. Yeah. Like Venom at a rave, like realizing that like
people, you know, like him.
That it's okay to just come out and be yourself. It's not a metaphor, obviously, for anything at all.
No,
right?
No. What? Yeah. Well, I don't even know what metaphor is.
Don't even know.
About? Yeah.
So it would be cool if the Spider-Verse did go back to Marvel. That being said, going forward, man, maybe just a little less corporate intervention with this stuff. Because if they worked alongside Marvel instead of against them, I think they could actually make really cool Spider-Man property stuff, but do it within the universe they're trying to build that you should be building together when right now you're building two separate things.
There was this thing when I watched the movie that kept confusing me. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm wondering, I'm sitting here looking at, like, we are getting what amounts to a Madame Web origin story. And to be fair, most of us don't know who the fuck this woman is. Mm-hmm. The problem is, she only exists in relation to Spider-Man. And they really, really, really tried to, like, keep Spider-Man at, like double arm's length, like 10-foot pole. Like, Spider-Man's over there. We know he's not coming. He's never going to show up and save the day. There's no cameo. Spider-Man's a baby. He's a fetus. He's not even born yet. Like, Spider-Man's not here. But Madame Web is only interesting in relation to Spider-Man because Madame Web is always written around Spider-Man. If you guys remember the 90s cartoon, and again, we're old, so if you're not that old, maybe go back and watch that cartoon because it's amazing. But in the Spider-Man cartoon, Spider-Man lives a whole life and he does his whole thing and he experiences loss and he experiences life. And, you know, that you have the Hobgoblin who is responsible for the disappearance of Mary Jane. And suddenly Spider-Man's just Peter Parker who has spider powers because he thinks radioactive spider. And suddenly this fucking crazy time traveling prescient woman shows up and she's Madame Web. And she's like, no, I'm the spider. Bitch, you don't even understand. And he's like, the fuck? I have spider powers. I crawl on walls. I shoot webs. She's like, I control the web of the universe, motherfucker. I control the time web. I touch everything. I know every out... motherfucker, do you want to talk to me?
I get it.
Answers.
We've all seen the time web. I understand.
I have answers for you. And that's why Madame Web is interesting, because all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I'm not shit. Look at this lady. She fucking has everything figured out and she needs my help to solve a problem. That's why Madame Web is interesting. Like, why would you make this movie where it's like, oh yeah, she's an EMT and she doesn't really know how, like looking at the future works.
Mm-hmm.
She's a little clumsy about it, but it's really charming when she blocks a missile with a piece of metal that she lifts over her head because she saw it coming. And, like, that's not why Madame Web is cool, guys. Like, I don't know. I don't know, man. Like,
I don't know what to
tell.
It
seems misguided.
It does.
It seems like someone who doesn't know. It seems like much like video game executives who don't actually like to play video games. This seems like a decision from somebody who doesn't enjoy watching movies.
It absolutely does.
Like, they would much rather go home and do cocaine. Mm. Like watch a movie. I don't have 2 hours. like what? Then don't produce them. Again, from the beginning, I'm on the side of good art and I want the people who like the art to be making the decisions about how it's made. I think that's going to be my complaint going forward, and I'll never back down from that subject. We can talk about capitalism or whatever all day long and say who's good and who's bad and what's evil, but I just want the art that I love to be good.
And be fun.
And for that to happen, people who actually like making it have to be in charge of making it.
I want the art that we love, those artists, to be compensated properly and have the time that they need to make the art that they want to make, whether that be film, whether that be paintings, whether that be video games. I want the people who bring joy to this world through art to be taken care of, and right now they are being taken advantage of.
Absolutely.
And that's the most upsetting thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would be so cool to live in a world where artists were compensated properly and taken care of, and we got to enjoy the fruits of their labor as we go through our, you know, frankly, it's been a long work week for us.
Yeah.
And getting to decompress was something fun and enjoyable. You know what? We watched a really shitty horror movie. We watched Feast 3 this week.
Mm-hmm.
And after the shitty week that Hector and I had at work, being able to hang out with a friend of ours and his significant other, eating hot wings. We ordered
we ate some wings. They were hot.
And just watched a shitty C horror film. You could tell that everybody that was making that movie enjoyed it,
mm-hmm.
no matter how bad it was.
Yeah,
I got to spend that time with my friends and watch people on screen that looked like they were having fun with their friends. That's what I want when it comes to these things.
Yeah, full on. And to wrap it all up, game industry people, you're suffering the most right now. Look to your SAG-AFTRA brothers and sisters. Look to your comrades. I mean, fellow laborers. I mean, other people who work in America, because I'm not allowed to use those other two words. Look at the people who have come before you in artistic mediums and know that no one steps onto a movie set who is not union. Or that project shuts down. Know that non-union projects rarely hit theaters, if ever. And that non-union projects are where the accidents really, really happen. They're where Alec Baldwin accidentally shoots someone in the face because they didn't have the proper safety precautions that are mandated by a union to keep their workers safe. That's why SAG-AFTRA and all the other unions in Hollywood exist around making movies. And know that you need those same protections if you're going to work in an industry where you get to exercise your talent and you get to do your art. You have to protect yourself first. Then you can thrive in the medium that we are so happy that you chose.
I spent a lot of time on this show trying to think of the perfect end phrase, the elegant way. I love, as somebody who loves to write, I love to find, you know, some kind of super obnoxious, poignant way to end each episode and wrap the whole thing up that we've been doing for the last hour. From chat from the Little Librarian, she said that I would love to see a time period where rich people once again employ pet artists just because they can.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time where the rich gave a shit about artists and they paid them properly for their art. And all we're seeing right now is them being exploited. So.
Or replaced by AI.
Yeah. And that's upsetting.
Well, this is why you unionize. You have your answer to a better future.
To a better fucking future. Yeah. That being said, it seems like a weird place to end the show, but we appreciate all of you. I know that these were very heavy subjects,
mm-hmm.
and this is definitely a different format than we normally have when it comes to our show. We appreciate all of you who tune into us every week. Those of you who are new, there's some new faces in the Twitch chat. We appreciate all of you.
Very much.
You know, to all of our patrons who make, you know, our show possible, we appreciate all of you. I hope that this was informative. If you have any questions or want to know our opinions about anything that we talked about this week, you can reach out to me directly at GNGGcast on Twitter. Goodnight.gg is our where you can become a patron of our show. This is a lot of heavy subjects, but these things are important.
It was a heavy week.
It was a heavy week for all of us. Until next time, for Hector, this is James.
And for James, this is Hector.
Everyone, good night.
And good game.